You know, we had the pleasure, I know many of you don't know this person, but you've heard of him, I'm sure, Murshid Karim Bashk, who's a long-time Murid in the Sufi movement. And you should know him because he is the person that is financially responsible for having built the Darga in India and also the Universal, which is the temple in Holland. Murshid Karim Bashk is, he's written books like Sufism in Action, and there's one on economics, isn't there? What's the title of that one? Anyone recall? He was the Minister of Finance in Holland. Have you met him? Yeah. And he was one of the five people that it kind of got distilled down to. His idea was of the European Union. He could see the value of these small countries uniting together, and he's the one that's responsible for the euro, uniting the currency. So I had the pleasure many years ago of meeting him and his wife, Murshida Ratan, and I had asked Murshida Ratan for the blessing of the movement. They had come for a federation gathering. And we were standing under the Delta symbol at the airport, and I thought, how perfect, because I also had been blessed into the Rouhaniyat and the representative of the Sufi order, and I wanted to have that blessing of the movement. And so we've been in touch for well over a decade, and Murshida Ratan passed in December, but Murshid Karim Bashk is alive and well and very actively involved in the Sufi work, and he invited us to his home for a visit, for tea. And this was just a few weeks ago, and he had mentioned to me in April when I met him in March, and then I met him again in April, and he had said, he had mentioned that Pir Murshid Ali Khan, who was the one brother that had this great gift of seeing and healing, that, you know, he always would do this. This is how it's been described. I didn't meet him, but it was like, God is the healer. So he said that Murshid Ali Khan always had them exercise every day. So we asked him, and he's very tall and very thin, and he's also quite, I mean, he's in his mid-80s. So we said, would you show us the exercises? And I had my little camera, and I was trying to video it, and we had our iPod up, and but he got up, he did this, and he's like, yes, he used to tell us. It was like this, I think. Like that. And he's doing, I mean, this huge tall man in his suit and tie, you know, and he's doing these exercises. So they did, he said they called that the leapfrog, I think was the name he gave. And they used to do that. The prescribed, at least beginning number of times, was 10. And then, and I'm telling you this because I think it relates to this teaching. I'm really not off track, although you may think I am. But they did push-ups. They did circles. The waist. 10 this way. And 10 this way. And the head. Also 10 this way. And then even the eyes. And then they did headstand, or could be shoulder stand. Was there anything else?
Also the eye rolls.
I said that, yeah. So he saw, I mean, they saw that as a vital part of the yoga. And here when it says, and when this power becomes less, then the will loses control over the body. So obviously these exercises would also help increase the breath, you know. And the body is very important to keep vital and strong and supple. As the power of the sun holds all the planets, so the power of the breath holds every organ. Besides this, the breath purifies the body by taking in new and fresh life and by giving out gases that should be put out. The breath, in its different aspects, acts differently. In every direction, the breath does a special work. The breath has a special work with every organ. And it has its particular influence upon every element of which the physical body consists. So what he's telling us here, I'll read a little bit further because he's starting to lead up to a practice. You probably know that, some of you. I went on to read earlier, every movement that takes place is directed by the power of the breath. At the same time, the breath alone has the power to stop any motion. For instance, walking, running, sitting, and standing are actions done by the power of the breath, and trembling, shivering, or waving the hands or feet without control show lack of power in the breath. It goes on to say, diseases, especially such diseases as nervousness, palpitation of the heart, and paralysis come from lack of power of the breath. All lung diseases are caused by unclearness of the breath. Troubles in the brain and troubles in the intestines are also caused by lack of regularity of the breath. This shows that breath is the key to health, which is all happiness in life.
Health is all happiness in life?
Health is, yes. This shows that breath is the key to health, which is all happiness in life. You know, when you don't feel well, you get a really good glimpse of that. I say to myself, for some reason I've been put in a position over the last 10 maybe 7, of walking with people that have terminal diseases and sort of helping them in that process of dying and crossing over. And I can assure you they would give anything. So, health is, and I often say, when people say, how are you? I just say, I'm so blessed. I could get out of bed today, and I feel well. You know, what's a greater blessing than that? I sometimes forget. So now we're going to, I'd like to teach you what is, did you have something to say, Musa? Okay. The elemental breaths as given by Hazratanayak Khan. Now, I want to tell you that I know we've been given the prescription, earth is in and out the nose, and water is in the nose and out the mouth, and fire is in the mouth and out the nose, and air is in and out the mouth, and ether is in and out the nose. But what some of you don't know is there were also indications that were given for direction of the eyes, a concentration on a color, and a point on the head or face to concentrate on. So you may want to even draw a picture and then put, like you're drawing a face, and then the first point for earth is the tip of the nose. And the next part for water is the bridge of the nose here. And fire is the center of the forehead. And air is the crown. And ether is, arm's length or more above the head.
Can you say that one more time? It was drawing.
Tip of the nose is earth. Water is the bridge of the nose. Do you all know this?
Mm-hmm.
Initiates, I'm asking. Mm-hmm. Fire is the forehead, the center of the forehead. Air is the crown, and ether is above the head, like an arm's length, a yard or something. So that's the first level of instruction, yes. Yes. What we're going to do is, with eyes closed, we will direct. If you're familiar with the certain yogic practices, you know this, that the eyes being directed certain places will affect levels of consciousness. And what this is doing is, the kundalini runs from the base of the spine. If you've had an experience or energetic experience of kundalini, what you know is it starts at the base of the spine. It rises up. That's why we see those pictures of the cobra. It's like that, the hooded cobra. But it is only half the journey. Did Edgar Cayce talk about this?
I know. I don't know where I got it.
Okay. And then it's only half the journey. It has to make its return. So it will flow. You'll feel the energy flow. You may feel something in your face and your jaw, and it flows back down, and it comes back to here where we did that breath this morning. See? It's this journey that it takes. But what we're doing here is, if you think about it, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. As it reaches the head, it becomes very critical, and this is stimulating part of that nerve that's coming up. You get it? I mean, you can conceptualize it, right? Maybe you'll feel it too. And as you do the practice, you'll start to feel, Hakima, I'm sure you've done this practice for a number of years, you can feel things sort of, a sensation or a pressure or something. And, yes?
Thinking of the colors.
And I'll get to the colors in a minute, yes. But I want you to concentrate. So you're concentrating with eyes closed, Joan, and your glance is, because in a lot of meditation we want to do this, looking up. So you really have to kind of train yourself. When you put your eyes down, it's a very grounding feeling. So you're glancing at the tip of your nose. So just try that much. And we're not even doing the breath. We're just going to kind of get used to the technology, and then we'll put it all together. So you're breathing in and out your nose, and you're concentrating. Your eyes are down as if you're looking. And if you want to, you could open your eyes momentarily just to see if you're looking at the tip of your nose. Now, it'll appear as if you're cross-eyed, but you don't have that sensation with eyes closed. And then allow the glance to shift as if you're at the bridge of the nose. So you're looking almost cross-eyed right at the top of that bridge where it meets your forehead and your nose. And just breathe. Just breathe normally. Don't do any special breath. And then allow the eyes to glance up as if they're looking at the center of your forehead. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay. And then you look up at the top, like you're almost like looking at the inside of the crown of your head. Your eyes go up to that place. They raise up, and you hold them there. as if you're looking up at this spot above the head. And there you will envision, as we do the practice, a ball of light, or it could be a crystal or a diamond. And you also know that light is descending from above and touching that object, a globe of light or a crystal or a diamond. And the light disperses and it flows back through you and around your auric field. But you're breathing and you're just imagine you're looking up and you're looking up higher, higher, and this object of concentration can also rise up that light, lifting the consciousness. And you can just let the concentration go because we have other things to add to it. But did you get a sense of how to do that?
Suggestion, if people are having trouble directing their gaze, when you begin, lower your eyelids just enough that there's just the smallest crack of light, and try to keep your lids at that point as you go through it. It makes it a little easier to direct your gaze if there's a little tiny bit of light coming through your lids.
Yeah, that's called hooding the eyes. You can hood the eyes. That may be distracting for others, but that's a good suggestion. Thank you, Felicia. So, now what I want to talk about are these elements. Because we talked about that story this morning of Murshid and the wind and, you know, his sort of resonance with that element. The elements are real. Anyone that met Murshida Vira knew that she really understood the elemental world. She really lived in that world. And ragas are an invocation of those elements. That's why certain ragas are only done at certain times of day or certain seasons. And this also comes, you know, the Zoroastrians really knew that too, these elements, you know, they worked with that. And Anayat Khan has brought that tradition into this body of Sufi teachings, really from the Zoroastrian tradition as well as the Vedic tradition. The Vedas, Farishta can tell you this, she does the fire puja. She puts it in a special oven that has different steps that invokes each element, and she makes offerings to each element. It's an invocation of elements in your fire puja. So we're invoking the elements. Now we'll do the practice as one series, but try to grasp the work, the job, the responsibility of the element. Because when you need that element, you can just go just to that element and use it as a medicine. So, for example, you're feeling a little scattered or dizzy, you know. Well, what element would you need to balance that?
Earth.
So you can use the earth breath. Now, if you have something, you feel there are obstacles in the way, and just can't make something happen, you can't accomplish a goal, what element might be useful?
Could be.
Water is the thing that no matter what is in its way. It's the element to help you accomplish something. Accomplish something, right? Move around an obstacle. And then, let's say you're just feeling so dogged and you really feel no energy, or you have a task that you need to do and you don't have the energy. I'm hesitating to use another word at this point, but the...
Stop.
Fire.
Yeah.
Right? Fire is the thing that lifts the consciousness. Aspiration. You know, I need to have this, you know, somehow come more fully into this. You know, I'm aspiring to do this thing, and yet I just can't seem to see the way. So fire can illuminate you, and it also offers that element of aspiration. And then you have something creative before you, and you know that you can't do it by prescription. There's no formula. And you need an element to support this creative process. We're getting through the process of elimination. Two more. What would that be? Elementally, we're going up. Yes, we've gone from the very dense, then water, we can still contain it, but it moves. From fire, you can't hold on to it. Then air. Air is inspiration. You need to feel inspired. You can invoke the air element and do the air breath. And then ether really is that element of, well, what do you think?
Equanimity.
Equanimity is a good term. Equanimity, but there are others. What do you think? What can you imagine? Can you feel it? Have you felt it in your meditations?
Ether?
The ether element, the etheric element.
Integration?
Could be integration, yes. Unity.
Calm.
Transcendent. It's really the element of, we're kind of going up the elemental scale. It's a very good preparation for meditation. A kind of equipoise and an integration of the elements and that kind of equanimity we feel whole. So, think of the elements and what they can offer you. Yesterday, I was terribly upset on my way into work. I had had a couple people on my way to work. I don't know, unconsciously, consciously, but it was like these, through telephone calls and things, these very disharmonious impressions. And I reacted against that because it was a pattern in me with these particular people to want to react. And I thought, I have to find the element that can help me. And so I parked the car in the garage and I was heading into a meeting and I thought, I have to remove these impressions from my mind. And so I used the air element. And really, by the time I got into the meeting, I was far more composed than I had felt. I was really ruffled. So that's kind of how that can work. Does that make sense? I mean, just from my own example. Life. Life happens, yeah? So you have to know, what tool do I have that can help me, yeah? Anyone else have anything to share at this moment? So let's go through it. This is what? Element.
Earth.
Okay. Now, I know also some of you know the corresponding element to color vibration is gold. Almost like this. Your page there, see that band of gold? That color of gold is earth. So when we're concentrating here, breathing, we're seeing a radiating gold light. And again, the eyes are concentrated here, and we're breathing in that gold light. And here is water. What color is water? It's green, but it's kind of like, it could even be that green color in the heart and wings there. It could be like that. You know, it has a little tinge of aqua to it. It's not like Crayola green. So here is what element and what color? And here is? Okay. And here is?
Red.
Yeah. Piramurshit Hadai, it also says you can actually see it as a flame in varying shades of red, and there may be even colors, other colors there. So. And then air. Oh, I gave the answer right. This is?
Yeah.
And the color is?
The color that's behind you.
Blue. Yeah, that's right. And you're breathing that in. And then above, again, is this white crystalline form or a clear crystal or diamond. And you're seeing the light descend from above. You know, Rishi Devere always talked about this area. She called it, and I think it's true, they call it this. I think I've seen it somewhere in Mershit's teachings, but other traditions call it the fontanelle. Mm-hmm. I mean, and maybe is that the scientific term? Anatomical. And she would say that, and that's that soft spot, you know, so we're bringing that. Yeah, so she would always say the fontanelle.
Interesting that she'd call it that.
Yeah. It is like a fountain. It's like exactly like a fountain. And if you know those pictures of Shiva, the fountain's coming out of the top of the head, right? I mean, we look at these things, and when you really study them things deeply, you think, oh my God, they're teaching pictures. You know, they're teaching us. I mean, I love going to the Asian collection in Kansas City and looking at the statues, and like, these are giving instructions. When you meditate on them in that way, they become living, you know, instructions for us. Those postures, you know, and really do it sometime the next time you're there. Look at some of those Buddha heads and look at where their eyes are, and so you can feel the presence of the breath or that Kuan Yin and royal ease. You know, just directing all that energy from the heart right to the earth. It's so beautiful. You know, sitting on her craggy rock. So those things are they're instructional if we're receptive to it. So again, here imagining a ball of light or a crystal, and also knowing that there's light descending from above.
So with respect to the color of ether,
yes,
I've heard it described also as smoky, which is quite different from the description.
It can be, you know, actually I think the more proper term would be like a pearlescent, which could look a little gray or smoky, but it has all the colors in it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Like a rainbow in fog is what I've heard it described.
Yes. I know, I've heard Kabir say that.
Yeah, often.
Often. But, And those, if those visualizations work for you, keep them. But these, I'm offering some other information, and I know the way Anayat Khan gave it was as a crystal ball of light, and as one continues the etheric breath, we see the light ascending, and we allow that consciousness to be lifted with that ball of light, as well as light descending and cascading through and around us. Sparkling light. You know, isn't it interesting that he works so much with light? Illuminating the path.
There's a children's meditation book called Moonbeam.
Is it?
Garth, and it's also called Or Starbright. And in fact, in it, she does this whole invocation.
Yes.
Is what it would be.
Yes.
But I used to do it with my students, and it didn't matter the age, but you actually ask them to visualize white light coming into the top of their head and how it releases through their arms and legs and their body and swirls and out the fingertips and out, you know, in their body and out their toes. And it's a children's meditation book for little ones.
However, I've used it with teenagers.
Yeah, you could use it with us.
It's really quite amazing because it's the same invoking that one. It's pretty amazing how it's just all the different things all just come in.
It's all connected. There's probably, you know, what rules the universe are probably, you know, three principles, and everything else is just, you know, sort of a commentary on that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, really, it's... you see, this is what Sufism is. If you want a definition, you can see that Sufism is the weaving together of all of this into one body of a transmission, of a teaching transmission. And Anayat Khan would describe it as Sufism is a light that you take into a room where everything you always wanted was there. You just didn't know it. All you needed was light. So really, in some ways, it's not even new. You started having that self-discovery, like, well, I kind of knew that, but I knew it in this way, and now I see how it applies and connects to that. Right. It's not even new. It's just sort of maybe illuminating something. Like that. It's not a new religion, that's for sure.
When I first got introduced to Sufism there in Kansas City, they had this little pamphlet that they handed out. And one of the things that really got me the most right in the heart was one of his teachings, Padre Nikon's, was Sufism is not a religion. Mm-hmm. It's a way of life. And it doesn't matter if you're a Buddhist or a Christian, Hindu, or whatever, he says, that's fine. He said, in fact, Sufism encourages you to learn the truth about your religion and live it to the truth.
Right.
That blew me away.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not something new. It's not like you have to...
Sufism is a religion, but it isn't.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. Okay, so... one more thing to consider while we do the breath. Here again, earth, the color is gold. We'll breathe in and out the nose while we're concentrating on that point, visualizing the color. We concentrate on a horizontal line. And remember here it was said, the breath in its different aspects acts differently. In every direction, the breath does its special work. So the earth breath is spreading in a horizontal line. The water breath is descending like water would just naturally flow downward. Fire does what? It rises. And air, I've heard it described as a zigzag, but in fact it's kind of all pervading, it's in all directions. Etheric breath is very still breath. I remember being with Wally Ollie one time, maybe some others were there, and he said I would describe the etheric breath, because people were asking, like, how would you describe that breath? He said, I really can't describe it, but if I were to try to describe it, I would describe it as the breath within the breath. And it's a very still breath. Very still kind of breath.
So, in relationship to the breath being more full than normal, would etheric be not necessarily full, but you know what I'm asking?
Refined.
It's very refined. It doesn't mean it's subtle, it doesn't mean it's shallow either.
Okay, that's what
I think if we do this very slowly, you'll feel it. Now, there's one other level of information. It's so interesting to me. because the earth element relates to kind of our internal armature, like the bones and everything. And then the water breath, of course, the blood and the lymphatic system. And the fire is, you know, the warmth in the body, you know, this self-generating heat. And it's also said that it is the thing that is, well, I'll go over that in a minute. And then the air element is the mind. And the etheric, again, is the union or the dispersion of all those elements. Yes.
I don't know if this is helpful, but when I do the etheric breath, I don't really think of it so much as breathing, but if you think of everything as being in this kind of a totality of light, and that totality of light kind of pulses, and with each pulse it's feeding your body, that etheric breath is kind of like that pulse. And so if you need to visualize something, if you just visualize this very subtle, I'm not talking about, you know, gigantic things happening, just this very subtle pulsation of light that I think approaches.
May I try to demonstrate the etheric breath and see if you can feel it? Did you feel it at all? Did you feel something? No?
Still.
You could feel that a little bit. That quality. Halima?
No. I just don't. It's kind of. But I think with the. By changing the focus, that kind of. And the. Coloring, working with that, I think I've got control. And it's kind of like, for me, it's like almost more when I'm not breathing, it's like the pause between the breaths.
Well, I'll give you some things when we're there to sort of help facilitate it.